Welcome to Serviced Accommodation Secrets with me, Sally Kemba. This is the podcast where you get the on-the-ground experience that we're living and breathing with our serviced accommodation units. So you get to share our hacks and tips, our mistakes, so you can learn from those and thrive on our success. Welcome to this episode of Serviced Accommodation Secrets. This time it is a Facebook Live that you're going to be listening to. So you'll hear me saying hi to people and there might be questions as we go through. So thanks very much for joining me in this episode and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome everybody. So Serviced Accommodation Secrets, the idea behind this is to bridge the gap between your learning and then, you know, you might have done lots of training with different companies. Pete and I did training with Progressive Mastermind as well. And we had monthly mentoring as well, which we still have. But then when you come to actually do it live, what happens is all of that theory goes into practice and you think, oh my word, there's all these parts to fit together. So the whole idea is to help guys who are starting out and anyone who's experienced, who've got maybe gaps in their knowledge, things they haven't encountered before, that I can help with my experience, but also I'm interviewing more experienced people as well, experts in certain areas of serviced accommodation. You may be acquiring property of your own or converting your own buy-to-lets, so you may actually own your property, but for this particular live and for my Serviced Accommodation Secrets podcast, the subject of this is how to find your first rent-to-rent serviced apartment or unit, because it may, of course, be a house. And this was something of a challenge. So you learn, first stage is to go and find landlords. So I'm going to give you five main hints here, five main tips, and that you can follow. So the first thing is to find your landlord. So how do you do that? You basically figure out, actually, this is not about property at all. It's actually all about people. And serviced accommodation is very much hospitality compared to buy-to-lets. And, you know, you've got assured short-hold tenancies for your HMOs as well as your buy-to-let tenants. So you're very much doing hospitality with two-night stays, even 2 to 3 month stays with guests. You know, you're actually servicing where they live, making sure linen is changed and all those kind of more hospitality type, hotel type things. You know, it's not so much your longer term issues. And one of the great things with landlords is that they may really like having tenants, but they may want their property managed differently. So landlords come in different shapes and sizes, but one of the brilliant ways to find them, and my first tip, is to find them at networking events, because landlords obviously, well, lots of you are going to be landlords as well, but landlords might have an agent looking after their property. But if an individual such as yourself who's looking for a rent-to-rent serviced apartment comes to them and wants their property looked after, there are lots of benefits that they won't necessarily know about. And you can get to chat to them at networking events and find out what kind of issues they're having, you know, solve problems for them. And then that works out well for you because it solves a problem for you. You have a property for your business and they have a property that A, is looked after really well, because as service department operators, we have to have the property in really top-notch condition. You know, it has to be looking amazing, really completely clean, absolutely under the beds everywhere, has to be immaculate. Everything has to be working all the time. You can't just wait till the morning. You know, if the TV is not working, it has to be working there and then, because your guests may only be there for 2 nights. And also, they don't have to deal with tenants at all. There's no evictions or anything like that because guests stay for a fixed amount of time. So they have a check-in day and they have a leaving day. Even with longer-term stays, you'd know what period the guest was staying for. And so those are two major things that you help with as a serviced accommodation operator. So big headaches gone then. So my main thing about networking is find out what people are doing. in terms, you know, landlords, what kind of issues they might have, and just get to know them. Don't suddenly say to them, you know, I'm doing service apartments, I really want your house. Just get to know them, because they may not tell you exactly what they're doing. They may want to find out about you first. So just be friendly. But great thing about networking events is that you can have a 20-second elevator pitch at some of them. And so you can stand up and say what you do and say you're looking for properties. So we did this every month at a Brighton event, the Pin down there. Pete and I would take turns, or quite often both of us would speak, and we'd say we were service apartment operators and we were in the north of Sussex and we were looking for properties and could solve landlords' problems. And so that was a really good way for everyone to know what you're doing, but then you get to know them better just chatting to them. So that's one good thing. You might have landlords that are just owning houses, but other types of landlords are developers, and they're really good to get to know as well. So they are going to be at networking events, whether it's your PINs, your PPNs, loads of other types of property networking events as well. Particularly, you know, in the cities, there are loads of different groups. And we're slightly more sparse where we are. We're in Sussex, so Sussex, Surrey, we need a few more networking events, I think. But we have got Crawley and we've got Brooklands and Brighton, all those areas, and also parts of London as well. So yeah, networking events, get out there, show people what you do. But also, if you don't get any bites from that, at least everyone's aware of what they're doing, because it may be that you get to know developers who are in the process of working out bids, or they have projects that are starting out and they take a long time, you know, they're slow boilers. So they may be thinking in the back of their mind, oh, I know Sally and Pete, or I know Karen, or I know all these different people who operate service departments. There are lots of guys who post on Facebook talking about, you know, wanting to get blocks. There are loads of guys in the mastermind we did who would have these blocks of I don't know how many apartments. And of course, as a developer, you want to be able to either sell your apartments if you built them out to flip, or if you're holding them, you may want to have some that are on buy-to-let agreements, or you may want to actually have somebody like ourselves operating serviced accommodation there, because that keeps them in really good condition. So there are different types of landlords, still freeholders if they keep the property. And that's what Pete and I were lucky enough to do, but round a sort of circuit. So my second thing, apart from your networking, the second thing to go and find your properties is, again, to go and find more people. And the thing to do is go and talk to agents. Okay, so I made, I don't know how many mistakes talking to agents, and it was really fascinating, because service accommodation is not necessarily understood by all estate agents. Some of them are really like, oh yeah, that's great. But what I found, and with hindsight really realised, is that they don't really get serviced accommodation until you've got one up and running, and then you're great friends with them, because you can provide them with lots of services. So they have tenants and potential tenants that you can help them out with in various ways I'll go into. So with agents, what you really need to do is know your pitch, I'll call it. So your pitch is the benefits that you offer and the benefits of serviced accommodation to them. And again, finding out what they need, you know, do they have landlords who are trying to let lots of similar properties, maybe five flats in one block of apartments, maybe houses that they haven't managed to let, that you could have a whole house with separate rooms for serviced accommodation. You know, they may have certain properties that are sticking, but they may be really, really nice properties that don't need refurbing, or they may need a refurbishment. And it may be that the landlord could actually JV with you, and you could do up the property. If it's not yours and it's still rent to rent, you're not going to want to spend a lot of money on it. So for those of you who don't know what rent to rent is, it basically means that as a serviced accommodation operator, we're a bit like a tenant, I guess, because we are renting from the owner of the property. They are our landlord, but it's a lease rather than an assured shorthold residential type of tenancy. So it's an actual lease. I'll go into a bit more detail about that soon. So in terms of going to agents, what I tended to do is phone them up because I'd see maybe some flats or a house that was available to let. So you want the lettings department, phone them up and arrange viewings. And one really key tip is don't talk to them on the phone about serviced accommodation or corporate letting, because quite often they might just switch off completely because A, they don't necessarily understand it, as I said. So easiest way to describe it really is corporate lettings. It's like Airbnb for business. I think that's really the easiest way to describe it. But, you know, they may have had bad experiences with people and they may just be put off. So they may have been put off. So what I would always do is arrange a viewing, but I wouldn't say what for, but I'd look to see several properties that would potentially fit and, you know, be suitable. So if they did like the idea of us running our business, the service departments, then it would be great because it would work out well. So I wasn't just wasting their time and practicing, but I'd go to the area that we wanted to operate in, which was originally Crawley, and I'd see these agents and I'd either say far too much or not enough. And I found that, you know, I'd say too much and overwhelm them and they'd be like, whoa, or I was a bit too sort of cagey and they, I don't know, they sort of say, oh, is it corporate lets? No, don't like those. And I kind of couldn't strike a balance. And also, if you ring up to make the appointment, you don't want to be sort of telling them some kind of tall story like I'm looking to rent an apartment for my great aunt Mabel or anything. You want to be saying truthful things. So I struggle with this because if on the phone you can't talk to agents about the fact you're going to be running serviced accommodation, what do you say? So I found the best thing initially was actually just to fill in online forms and say I wanted to go and view, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 flats, and that, you know, arrange the time and which ones they were, and just make the appointment that way. So I didn't have to worry about anything silly, I'd say. I just arranged it. And then when I saw them, I would just try and breathe a bit more, pace myself, and just explain gently what I was doing. And that seemed to help, but we still didn't get that far. So we actually moved to looking in Red Hill. So take it as read, you'd have researched your area you were going to and know that there's a demand. And yeah, so we'd researched this particular town and established there were lots of businesses there that were likely to have people on projects, short-term training, maybe coming from overseas because there are lots of insurance companies and lots of different types of office workers coming from maybe the UK as well, from the north, different regional offices and things like that. So we established this good area. And so whenever I went to meet any of the agents, I'd be very smart always. So you don't want to just arrive, you know, first impressions and everything. So Pete and I went together for this one particular one. And he's very good at pacing himself with talking as well, whereas I just tend to speak quite fast, as you can tell. So with both of us there, it was quite good because and we'd arranged to see 3 apartments in one place, but they were no good. And then we were chatting to the girl in the agency, just sitting in the office and explaining gently what we did. And she started to get really quite worried. She said, oh, I don't know if we can do this corporate letting. It would be different if you were just renting out to one company. But if you're going to have lots of people, it's quite worrying. And so what we did was just sat there gently and explained that, you know, we knew what we were doing. We were doing this professionally and we had things in place to make sure we weren't just going to have loads of people having parties. We were firmly aiming at the corporate market. And then she said, actually, I've got these people who are renting out these apartments and they might be interested, but they're not finished yet. So they were still being built. So essentially what I'm saying is chat to people gently, but don't overwhelm them, because what it transpired was a whole block had been built, half of it had been let out, half of it had been sold. But in the bottom of the block, 3 extra apartments had been built on the ground floor and they weren't finished. but they didn't have anyone lined up for two of them. So we said, okay, they look really good. So the girl in the lettings agent, she was great. She said, okay, what I'll do, these developers, they're really, really nice, and I'll get them to give you a ring. You can take it from there and they'll see if they're interested. So the next thing that happens is my phone is ringing a couple of days later, and I can see it's the developer's phone number, and it's like, oh my God, I don't want to answer the phone, you know, I don't want to mess it up. But anyway, so I did answer the phone and I explained what we wanted to do. And so we arranged a meeting, and actually we met the managing director in their actual apartment. So they still had their concrete floors. I think they were painted, kitchens were sort of in. And that was just over a year ago. And so we just had a meeting that was supposed to be half an hour, but we actually chatted to him for an hour and a half. And he said at the end, I've got a really good feeling about you. And so let's give it a try, because we had no previous history. We'd done over 6 months of training quite intensively on a mastermind. We said we had mentors. You know, we've got different backgrounds. So I'm an artist. Pete's been in the corporate world, IT. So it's not like we're property people. But we explained to this really nice guy, the MD, what we wanted to do. And we had no bank history. We literally just opened our Metro Bank account, but he was fine about that. He said, okay, so we worked out the numbers, worked out what we were going to do, and we took on two apartments, really finding out about each other, kind of aligning your values. So see if you want to work with people based on what feeling you get from them as well. So obviously it's a business thing, so the numbers have to work. I've strayed from my numbering, but I would say number three would be to really get to chat to your potential landlord / developer. I mean, they're the freeholders and our landlords. Get to know them and make sure your values are aligned. And they're not going to be necessarily a perfect fit, but you need to be absolutely clear that you are running a serviced accommodation business. You're not subletting. You've got permissions, because working with somebody like a developer actually gets rid of some problems, which I'll go into. So overcoming problems is another thing. And you know, you can tell whether you can actually work together. So we agreed they do all the maintenance, which is a great benefit, and we run it to be really nice serviced accommodation and keep it in really good condition. So a year later, we've had a few things, realizing we made mistakes, but that was a really good start. So finally we get there by just talking to people. So people business. So as well as your networking and going to agents, you can do other things that I haven't done. So we tried looking in Gumtree, and you could make a Facebook page or do Facebook ads to find landlords, because, you know, locally you'll have individual landlords who want to let their properties. And if you got your pitch organised, like I sort of did for agents, but never really balanced it very well until I finally got there, what you can do is look at what benefits they're going to have in regards to things like Section 21. Section 24. Don't know why I said Section 21. So Section 24 is the ruling that came in that affects landlords who don't own their property in a company. They are individually owned under their own name. And what it means is that the interest that they're paying on their mortgage cannot be claimed as an expense, and it's actually added onto the profit. So it doesn't matter if a landlord owns a property and has no mortgage on it, that won't affect them at all. But if they have a mortgage on it, then that is an issue for them, because they're going to make less money. Obviously, a mortgage could be a substantial amount of what their overhead is to run that property. So one of the really good benefits that you could make sure you got up your sleeve when you're contacting these individual landlords is Section 24, because as a service department operator, you're running a business there. You're not renting it out as such. You're running a business, and as such, it isn't subject to residential rules. So Caroline is saying, when you're let leases with a developer, how tied in are you? So if I wasn't able to rent out, so I can come into that as well, Caroline. So you are quite tied in. We've got a 3-year agreement, but with a 1-year break clause. So there are different types of agreement that you can have. So I just finished this bit about Section 24. So that can really help landlords who are just individually renting out the odd flat here and there. So they've got maybe one in one block, maybe a house, maybe another flat in another block. But what you want to make sure is, and I will say, I think that's number, we got to number four now, is do your due diligence and have your terms and conditions all agreed properly. So Caroline, I can answer you there. So we do a thing which is called guaranteed rent. And that means that regardless of whether we rent out the property or we have guest booking, that is to say, whether we rent it out to guests or not, we still have to pay a monthly rent. And we have overheads. Obviously, the overheads are actually quite high. So we pay all the bills, electricity, water. We actually pay business rates because we're a business. Broadband. So broadband actually for guests is more important than water and actually anything at all. They arrive, they come in, and yeah, where's the broadband code? You know, it's most in the old days, it'd be a glass of water or where's the toilet? But no, now it's like, what's the broadband password? Yeah, you've got quite high overhead. So you have to be able to make sure you've evaluated your area and you're going to have enough guests. And initially, to be honest, in the winter, it was quite quiet for us. But the more we got known, we relied on booking.com and regular corporate guests, but we weren't 100% booked by any means. So gradually it's got better and better. So what you can do is have a different kind of arrangement with a landlord where you just pay a management fee instead. And that means that you've got a lower risk. But because we are new and actually our freeholder prefers this arrangement of guaranteed rent, that's what we're doing for the moment. So later on, hi Patrick, hi Kaz, we may be able to work out with them management agreements, but certainly with other landlords, we'll want to do that because there are other benefits to not having such high overheads and turnover as well. But so we just have to try and make sure that we've got occupancy rates really high. I've been meeting with local companies recently as well, and we have different marketing strategies just to get long-term bookings. And this is how estate agents become your friends afterwards too. But just getting back to the term, so service departments are brilliant for like one, two or three or four people rather than a whole house potentially. But the key thing is, you know, when you buy a flat, you're not buying the whole building, you're just buying a leasehold. So if you bought a flat yourself, you'd buy a leasehold. And that means you earn like halfway into the wall of the whole place. And then the freeholder still owns the shell, the grounds, the exterior of the building. You know, they maintain the roof and everything. But in the same way, it means that you have a lease that you have to adhere to. So if a landlord is the owner of a leasehold flat, they have to abide by the lease that they signed as the buyer of that. And what can happen is that their lease doesn't allow subletting, you could call it, or it doesn't allow you to run serviced accommodation essentially. So if it says that the place is only allowed to have one family in it and you're not allowed to sublet, you would actually have to approach the freeholder and ask to get that changed. And if they didn't agree, you wouldn't be able to run serviced accommodation there at all. So this is really key. So you've met your landlord and they say, yeah, I've got a lovely flat, and you really want to have that flat to run your serviced accommodation. Don't just go agreeing without doing this due diligence and making sure your agreement actually allows it, because you could have everything set up. You could have all the furniture in there. You could have lots of bookings. And then what can happen is the freeholder said, hang on a minute, you're not allowed to do that. The landlord is breaking the terms of his lease, and they can actually ask you to leave. And obviously that's really not good. And I know that has happened to people. Hi, Karen. Good to see you. So Karen's another one of our SA experts here. So good to see you here, guys. And you really don't want to have your business up and running and then have it come crashing down around your ears because you didn't sort these things out early on. Also, if the landlord has a mortgage, apart from worrying about Section 24, they're going to have to make sure the lender agrees to serviced accommodation being run in the property that they are lending the money on. So usually they will just agree. You just have to phone them. A bit like if you're a resident, you know, owner of your property, and you buy another one, but you turn your original place into a buy-to-let, you should ask your lender for permission as well. Because for serviced accommodation, you don't actually have to change the planning class. Do phone up your council though and check, because again, councils find serviced accommodation a little bit confusing. So you have to make sure that you've got these basic terms and conditions all sorted out in the very beginning before you start. And even if you have a delay to getting your guests in there, it's really important that you're going to get this sorted, because you don't want to be signing contracts that mean you can't actually yet run your business there in the end. So don't rush it. Make sure that you know what the landlord has in his lease and see a solicitor. So we had to do that. We had to seek the advice of a solicitor in regards to somebody's lease, another property we were potentially looking at using for serviced accommodation through a landlord, and it didn't allow it. So you'd have to get that rewritten. And obviously the freeholder would say yes or no, but you'd have to get that part rewritten and just make sure. So really vital that you sort out the basics before you leap in. Okay, so I think we got to four. So that was your terms and conditions. Okay, and just remember really that you're all solving problems for each other. So there's no hard and fast rules in what you want to agree. But we worked out an agreement with our freeholders that we were both happy with. We ironed out a few different bits and pieces and then made sure it was all above board. And then we went forward from there. Important things to think about once you've got your rent to rents is things like utilities. Are they actually online and things like that? So one thing that we had a real issue with was broadband. So having said, it's more important than water, because our properties were brand new, and actually we ended up with three, not two units, because the landlords / freeholders, developers, let's call them the freeholders for now, they did have a tenant that was going to go into the third one, because there were three in a row on the ground floor, which is great because it spreads your overheads as well. And what happened was that this tenant didn't quite meet their criteria. They weren't quite happy. So they offered us all three. So that's brilliant, because it means we've got three in a row, really easy on changeover days. We've got everything all in one place. And you can just nip in and out, sorting out everything that's, you know, next door. You end up with laundry in the wrong place quite often, but at least it's all in one place. Our laundry storage is really near. Our keep safes are really near each other, and it's just all together. And we have two bed apartments in the same block, actually higher up now as well, because the landlords were happy with us. So yeah, we actually didn't do enough due diligence on our utilities there, and for a whole month in the beginning we didn't have any broadband whatsoever. So make sure that you have these things in place. And we could have sort of said, well, it wasn't our fault, but we probably should have pulled the string a bit more, because Virgin were the suppliers and they thought it was installed, because the people high up in Virgin had been told it was installed by the people on the ground, but it turned out there weren't even cables. So it was a challenge for a month telling people that there was no broadband at all. And also the apartments were like, oh, what's that thing where you can't receive internet signal? Faraday cage, that's it. So even the mobile signals wouldn't get in, and nothing. You had to lean out the front door to get your phones to work. So if you want to make sure that you don't have those sorts of challenges, just check about the utilities up front as well. So we did learn that. One other key thing about your agreement and your terms and conditions, and a mistake, honestly, that we have made and that we've only realised recently, is in order for the other directors to be happy with us, the managing director wanted us to allow small rent increases annually. So we said okay, and we didn't put a percentage in writing, and it is a larger increase than we wanted it to be. So basically, if you have a three-year agreement, which I suggest, have a three-year agreement, because then you can have furniture and electricals on three-year agreements as well. What you can do is have a one-year break in case it isn't working out, but say no rent rises or very minimal, like 2%, something like that. Because obviously we don't want them to lose out on rent, but we are providing an amazing service and the apartment is in much better condition than it would be if you had a tenant in there who, some tenants look after places brilliantly, but they're never going to be top-notch like a serviced accommodation operator keeps theirs. So, okay, so I think we're nearly towards the end. So I need to summarise. As you can tell, I could talk for England. So basic thing of looking for rent-to-rent properties is A, do lots of networking to find your landlords, developers, freeholders. Do an elevator pitch, so 20-second pitch, just saying what you do, where you're based, what you're looking for, what you're looking to solve as problems for people, and what you can offer. And just get to know people so everybody knows what you're looking for. Know what you're offering. So learn, when I say a pitch, I'm basically saying know the benefits of the business you're going to run, because you are solving a huge amount of problems for the owner of a property. Even if you might have a new investor who buys a house, they don't necessarily want to have a letting agent look after it. They may think, I could let it to a serviced accommodation operator and they could keep it in amazing condition. I don't have to worry about coming back and it looks like it hasn't been cleaned for a year. So it could be an investor like that. Go to agents and know what you're going to say to them. So don't say too much, don't say too little, and don't spill the beans over the phone. Try and talk to them in person. But the way that I really preferred doing it was making an appointment with an email and then talking to them in person so that they can really see you're real people who can help them with their real problems. And, you know, it really works out well. It's a real partnership thing. So go and see properties with a view to what you're looking for. Meet up with the landlord. Make sure that you've got your terms and conditions and all of the detail of your contracts and all of your utilities all ironed out so that you know before you go, you know, you're going to start and it won't be perfect as in Rob's book, but try and get as much as you can lined up and agreed beforehand. Don't think, oh, I really like this flat, I don't want to rock the boat and ask to see the lease. It's vital that you know whether you're allowed to run your business there. And enjoy it, really, I would say, as well. I've got a brilliant team of people who work with me. I think a couple of them might be here. Sarah should be here. And it's fabulous. It's really fun. You meet amazing guests. Our landlords are brilliant. And we've got good relationships with agents as well. So that's really wrapping up this first, well, Facebook Live, but also serviced accommodation podcast as well. So thanks everybody for coming. If you've got any comments and if there's anything else you want me to talk about or any questions you've got regarding what I was saying, then do send them through to me. So comments in after the live, and I'll put the link on my Facebook page. So I've got a Serviced Accommodation Secrets page and also a group. So it's an interactive group. People can put posts in there. So I'll add you if you ask me. And so this is all very new and very exciting. And I just want to share everything so I can help people, really. And so I look forward to seeing you again another time. And thanks for all your messages. It's lovely to see lots of you here. So thank you, guys.
Sharing the secrets of success.